City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Steven Rader.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
The Windy City Queer Cast, show number 382. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Steven Rader.
And Steven, Emmys are here and come and gone, and your boyfriend snagged an Emmy.
Yes, he did. He did. And I don't know if this is common knowledge, but I think it was sort of, I saw a few websites that sort of showed that he's gay. Did you know that?
Jim Parsons?
Yes. Yeah.
From the Big Bang? Why do you think it showed that he was gay?
Well, I don't know if it showed, right? It's been very hush-hush or whatever, and he's, I don't even think there are many pictures of his boyfriend at all. But I think that's just great. I don't know. There's something about, I kind of knew, but I didn't know. Oh, my God. Now there's a hope for me yet. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No, he's been in a very long relationship, apparently, with his boyfriend for quite a number of years, is what I read somewhere, I think. And it's just,
the gayest
Emmys
ever.
What a coup, though.
Yeah.
What a big coup.
Yeah, it was. And you were so excited. I mean, I know it meant that if he won, he didn't get to come to your apartment. But, you know, I guess the cards were in it. But if he's in a relationship, I know you don't want to break that all up anyhow. So.
Yeah, well, maybe I would.
Yeah. Jane Lynch also won for Glee, which is so amazing. Kissed her now wife and thanked her from the stage. Ryan Murphy won for Glee, openly gay writer, director, producer of Nip Tuck and also Glee. It was just gay. I mean, come on.
It was.
Right? And Modern Family with Eric Stone Street winning, who plays one half of the gay couple. He's actually the straight actor of the two, but it's just so fantastic as Cameron on that show. So really, really
Emmy.
Brilliant.
It's a big old gay Emmy.
It's a big old gamey. Big old gay.
I mean, anytime you have Tim Gunn opening number,
yeah,
it's a gay Emmy.
Yeah. Tim Gunn, maybe my favorite gay on TV. Well, happy Labor Day.
Happy
and
Labor Day.
I guess that we get, it always seems opposite, right? Like maybe it should be called No Labor Day or Stop Laboring Day or something. It's very strange to call it Labor Day and then we all don't labor that day, right?
Well, yeah, I guess what you're saying, but we're supposed to acknowledge, you know, people who labor.
Is everybody these days, except for those who are trying to labor and desperately want to labor and can't find a job in which to labor in. So
I was going to say, I would say that, you know, Madoff wasn't laboring, or he is now, or whatever he's doing. I'm sure wherever he is, he's laboring all right.
No, but he's living in like the cushy life. My father said, you know, did you see where Madoff is? He goes, I want that life. He gets taken outside to exercise 1 hour a day, doesn't have to think about his meals. He has time to, like, read and I guess he's in a pretty cushy existence. So
wow.
my father actually felt like solitary sounded like and his little deal was kind of like the spa of incarceration.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, he's not playing the back nine or anything, but he might be playing a new back nine. That may be the only part that's not good.
And scene. There we are.
And scene. So, you know, you and I are both from the South, so we don't have to argue the fact that there's no more white leather, no more white shoes, bags. I really think no more white pants after this week. Like, this week, mm-hmm. you have to start thinking that summer's done and white goes back deep in the closet. Is that something that you call people out on if you see people wearing white after Labor Day?
I do, but only because I, you know, here it is. I sold shoes my last 2 years of college and in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold shoes to like a really, you know, old Southern woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the hard way. Don't even think about trying to push anything that looks like it's white
mm-hmm.
on an old Southern woman after Labor Day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, it's bone. No, no sign. You know, no, there is no such thing. Like, fashion has not changed. I'm sorry. That's
mm-hmm.
it. Quite frankly, you told her.
It's true. I mean, I was rushing around this past week trying to wear everything white I could possibly wear. Like,
yeah.
I almost wore like a white plate on my head. I mean, I just was wearing white everywhere I could wear white. And yet it was pretty chilly. It was a pretty chilly into our last week and the weekend. And but it's warming up this week. So summer's not really done, even though the lifeguards leave the beach and the white leather goes in a box somewhere until next May, June, when it gets pulled out again.
There you go. There you go. But, you know, it makes sense. It's a sort of a nice little thing. You know, let me say this. If I know that fashion rule, everybody should know it because I know nothing.
Oh, you do not. Stop it.
Oh, please.
You're
no,
so
no.
fashionable, Stephen Rader. Come on.
Oh, no. Jeans and a Quiet Riot t-shirt? No, not fashionable. Not at all.
So we have a really interesting conversation that's going to start on our podcast today that is going to continue later on in the month of September with the organization LifeLube, lifelube.org. They have these amazing free community forums, and we had director Jim Pickett on the show back in May when their show Love in the Age of Grindr was going on. It really created a very stimulating conversation about people hooking up, mostly guys, I guess I should say, gay men hooking up in this age of instant, where are you, who are you, and where can I meet you? And now the conversation is going to be called What's Love Got to Do With It? And as our Tina Turner theme of the day. And really, this is a conversation about when is it okay to stop using condoms with your boyfriend? When is it okay for me to stop doing that? So I guess it's a very complicated conversation and one that isn't had out in the open very often. And Jim Pickett's going to start, you know, talking with us about some new research, what the gay men's community already, where the trend is with this conversation and what they hope to explore at this forum here in a couple of weeks in September at the Center on Halstead. So fascinating conversation, I got to say.
Very much so. And it's a difficult conversation to have. Very
yeah.
difficult conversation to have.
Absolutely. Is it something that you relate to? Do you relate to having that conversation?
Well, I mean,
is that every gay man has to have that moment?
Well, I would say two things, and I'm going to probably be a little too blunt right here, but it's, you know, the use of condoms in this day and age is, I mean, nigh on to rare. I mean, you know, I feel like a big old freak at the party sometimes, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And I'm of the belief that you sort of have sex with, and everyone you have sex with, you assume they have HIV if you're negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that you always practice the same things. And, you know, whatever I feel comfortable with or my risk, I'm comfortable with this amount of risk, is not what someone else is comfortable with. But
right.
sort of set that for yourself and move forward. And, you know, I think what's dangerous is when people sort of get into places of Well, I'll do this with a positive person and this with a negative person. And since it's my boyfriend, and he's never going to cheat on me, and, you know, it just gets to a really weird place. Plus, then if you aren't cheating on each other, you know, if there is a very monogamous relationship and you still want to use condoms, because really that, you know, is the safest way to continue, it really says something about your trust of each other. It just gets into so many muddy, muddy, muddy places.
Yeah.
Muddy, muddy places.
Well, and I think that the researchers and the people kind of trying to have an understanding of this are probably behind the curve of what gay men are already doing and negotiating. So it would be an interesting forum for you to attend, too. I mean, with your work within the HIV/AIDS community as well, I think there'll be a lot of leaders at this forum, because I think it is a conversation that doesn't happen very often out in the open. And I think there'll be a lot for many different types of gay men to learn from one another talking about it. And because, you know, as a gay man, I just assume that all gay men use condoms all the time. And then, you know, I hear from you and from others that it's quite rare. Often.
Well, I mean, can you blame people? Because the way I've always seen it, you know, when you and I were, you know, sort of coming up, mm-hmm. you know, you'd see somebody that was very healthy, and then they'd look like an Auschwitz victim 6 months later.
Right.
So when you had powerful statements of how HIV positive people were okay,
right.
and that it was okay to be HIV positive and living with AIDS, then, you know, you needed that message to counterbalance all the horror. But then when people were living longer through protease inhibitors, and, you know, no one's having that horror around them day to day.
Right.
No one's friends are passing away, you know, left and right, bam, bam, bam. Then you get all these positive messages. And, of course, people who are young don't think anything about it. Of course
mm-hmm.
they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see people with HIV, they're on a boat, they're sailing, they're, you know.
Right.
Look at me, I'm taking this pill. So they don't really understand. And God forbid it ever goes back to what it was. God forbid.
Yeah.
God
yeah.
forbid.
Well,
so,
I mean, it's fantastic that people can live with the virus and live a full life. That's obviously not what you're saying, but that there doesn't seem to be the same fear of contracting HIV that
yeah,
was
I don't
around
want to scare people like we used to do. I mean, I think that's a horrible thing too, but we're so good at getting the message out that everyone is, it's okay to be HIV positive. Maybe we went a little overboard. I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know. But
interesting.
It is definitely different to talk to people who don't know anybody
yeah.
who died.
Yeah.
And I can, like, you know, name, boom, 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 boom.
Well, and I think there'll be many, I think there'll be both perspectives at this forum, which is why I think it's going to be really interesting. I think both sides may have something to learn from the other.
Yeah.
And that will be interesting. Well, I am thrilled that Jim Pickett's on the show with us today. Also, there is this amazing documentary on the soldier Tillman who went over to serve in Iraq. He was seen as a war hero. And then when he died, he was revered even more as a war hero and kind of as an icon of the patriotism of that war. And now his family has come out with some amazing filmmakers and made a documentary film that really exposes the truth around the death of Pat Tillman. And that's going to be on Richard Knight Jr. giving us a review of the Tillman movie. And also what's going on in the news, much, much more going on than just the Emmys here locally, nationally, and around the world. So stay with us. Big show.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite, and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
In Tennessee, former Memphis police officer Bridges McRae has pled guilty to beating the late Dewana Johnson, a transgender individual. By admitting his guilt before his scheduled retrial, McRae positioned himself to receive a 2-year sentence instead of the 10-year sentence he would have gotten if a jury had convicted him. McRae admitted to beating Johnson in a display caught on a surveillance tape in 2008 while booking Johnson on a prostitution charge. Sometime after the beating, Johnson was fatally shot outside her home. The shooter remained at large.
In Nebraska, Omaha authorities have arrested George Vogel, 62, for spraying mace into a crowd of protesters from Kansas's anti-gay Westboro Baptist Church and counter-protesters at the August 29th funeral of a U.S. Marine. Vogel has been charged with multiple counts of assault. The church members were protesting at Staff Sergeant Michael Bach's funeral because they believe that soldiers' deaths are God's punishment for homosexuality.
In California, the Permanent Judicial Commission of the Redwoods Presbytery of the Presbyterian Church USA upheld 3 of 4 charges against Reverend Dr. Jane Adams Farr that she violated her ordination vows by presiding over the marriages of same-sex couples. A minister for 36 years, Farr officiated the ceremonies during the time the state legally recognized same-sex marriage.
In Chicago, some community activists are calling for the closure of La Cueva, a little village bar that attracts a large gay and transgender clientele. Although La Cueva, which has been open since 1972, has been recognized for providing a welcoming space for Latino LGBT people, opponents say that the bar is a site of illegal activity in a neighborhood that is home to many families.
In Texas, the state appeals court has overturned a lower court's ruling that 2 gay men who married in Massachusetts could divorce in Texas. Last year, a district judge said that the men could legally terminate their marriage. However, the 5th District Court of Appeals in Dallas has reversed that decision and has ordered the district judge to dismiss the case. The appeals court felt that Texas district courts do not have subject matter jurisdiction to hear same-sex divorce cases.
The U.S. Justice Department has decided not to pursue hate crime charges against Corporal Kyle Joseph Cronauer and Lance Corporal Christopher Charles Stanzel, who allegedly attacked a gay man in Savannah, Georgia this summer. They allegedly knocked down Kieran Daly because they thought he winked at them. The Marines' case will be heard September 9th. They are now charged with committing misdemeanors.
The 2014 Gay Games are still set to take place in Cleveland. The Federation of Gay Games had ousted the Cleveland Synergy Foundation because the foundation allegedly failed to meet certain obligations.
In Springfield, Massachusetts, Cathedral High School athletic director slash dean Christine Judd is claiming she was pressured to leave the school because she and her female partner got married. Judd left her post after meeting with school officials and is no longer working for the Roman Catholic Diocese of Springfield school system. Judd said that even though Massachusetts allows same-sex marriage, the church policy does not, which led to her job loss. She is considering legal options.
In Florida, Alfred Chadwick McMurray, a 31-year-old gay man, was found murdered in an Oakland Park home. He was discovered tied up, lying in a pool of blood. Authorities hope that McMurray's truck, which was stolen and found elsewhere, will provide some clues. Officials have not revealed if McMurray's past, which includes an arrest for drug possession and time in prison, played a role in his death.
In California, Craig McCarthy, an ex-Marine and bartender who was the henchman of alleged con man and murderer Kaushal Nirola, has pled guilty to attempted murder, robbery, and other charges regarding the 2008 appearance of art dealer Cliff Lambert. Nirola allegedly hired McCarthy in an attempt to sell Lambert's possessions. Nirola, his ex-boyfriend, Daniel Garcia, and 2 other suspects still face charges, while McCarthy is scheduled to be sentenced on January 21st, 2011.
In Georgia, the Atlanta Police Department has named 9 members of its Gay and Lesbian Advisory Board. The new panel will help continue recent efforts to improve relations with GLBT residents. Last September, police raided the Atlanta Eagle Bar, with patrons claiming that authorities used anti-gay slurs.
In world news, former Cuban leader Fidel Castro has blamed himself for the rampant homophobia that took place in the 1960s.
Castro told the Mexican publication La Jornada that gays being rounded up as counter-revolutionaries and put in labor camps constituted a great injustice. Castro said, "In those moments, I was not able to deal with that matter of homosexuals. I found myself immersed principally in the crisis of October, the Cuban Missile Crisis, in the war, and in policy questions."
In England, Crispin Blunt, an MP in the Department of Justice, has come out of the closet, separating from his wife in the process. Blunt, the uncle of actress Emily Blunt of The Devil Wears Prada and The Young Victoria, was an army officer for more than a decade.
A report in the Journal of Evolution and Human Behavior states that gay men and heterosexual women compete with individuals within their own groups to be the thinnest. The study found that these two groups naturally compare themselves to others who are viewed as more successful, a trait not noticed in lesbians or heterosexual men. Norman Lee of Singapore Management University, which conducted the study, said that the behavior is evolutionary in nature.
In New South Wales, Australia, the lower house narrowly passed a same-sex adoption bill that was altered from its original version. Independent MP Clover Moore introduced the measure and then agreed to amend the bill to allow faith-based adoption agencies to discriminate against same-sex couples. Then another amendment was added that allowed birth parents to bar gay and lesbian parents from adopting if they wish.
In entertainment news, the 62nd Annual Primetime Emmy Awards last week in NBC were one of the most gay-friendly in history. Out lesbian actress Jane Lynch won for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy for her role as Coach Sue Sylvester on the TV series Glee. She kissed her wife and thanked her, as well as her lord and creator, openly gay series producer Ryan Murphy. Murphy himself won for directing Glee, and Neil Patrick Harris won as a guest star on Glee. Plus, Eric Stone Street garnered an award for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy for portraying one half of a gay couple on TV's Modern Family.
Out gay singer George Michael has revealed that he checked himself into rehab in July for drug addiction. Michael decided to go the day after crashing his car into a store in North London. Recently, Michael pled guilty to marijuana possession and driving under the influence of drugs.
Guns N' Roses lead singer Axl Rose reportedly partied at the gay club Bungalow 8 in London Night Spot. More than 20 years ago, Rose dealt with charges of homophobia and racism for his song One in a Million. However, since then, he has performed with musicians such as Sir Elton John.
Archie Comics has now come out with the issue that introduces gay teen Kevin Keller. In artist and parent story, Isn't It Bromantic, Kevin arrives in Riverdale and Veronica is interested in him. However, Kevin tells Jughead, "It's nothing against her. I'm gay."
Gay fave Margaret Cho has been paired with out dancer Louis Van Amstel on Dancing with the Stars, which starts on September 20th. Also, Dirty Dancing's Jennifer Grey, who's 50, will dance along with singer Brandy, Abtastic Mike, The Situation Sorrentino, Florence Henderson, and David Hasselhoff.
Jennifer Lopez's deal to be a new judge on American Idol is all but done. Lopez would work with original judge Randy Jackson and Aerosmith singer Steven Tyler. There is no comment on Kara DeGuardi's future with the show.
According to sundry media outlets, clothing designer Calvin Klein, who is 68, is seeing 20-year-old male model Nick Gruber, who is also known as gay porn actor Aaron Skyline. Gruber, who has been pictured with Klein at various events this summer, has been in movies such as Next Door Buddies. 2 years ago, Klein, who divorced Kelly Rector in 2006, told Vanity Fair that he has had affairs with men and women.
Superstar Lady Gaga would like to become an ordained minister in California so she can officiate same-sex marriages. The Alejandro singer, who is a very vocal gay rights supporter, has reportedly taken an online course. The recent California ruling overturning Prop 8 spurred her to go the ministerial route.
And the new Miss Universe, Mexico's Ximena Navarrete, is in favor of same-sex marriage. Navarrete recently said, "I think we have to learn to respect because they are people just like us. There is no difference, and I think it is unfair to discriminate against someone because of the sex he or she prefers." And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and this is your Night at the Movies Minute. The Tillman Story is a searing investigative documentary by Amir Barlev, which finds the family of the slain war hero going head-to-head with the Bush regime and not backing down until they get answers about the true nature of their son's untimely death in Afghanistan. For reasons that have never been clearly explained, square-jawed movie star handsome Pat Tillman turned down a multi-million dollar pro football contract to defend his country after the attacks on 9-1-1. But whatever the reason, once Tillman made his decision, that was that. No questions asked. Tillman signed up along with one of his brothers, and after the media blitz had focused on his decision, he dropped out of the news until he was reported killed in action. Almost immediately, as Barlev's film reveals, the Bush White House endeavored to use his death to their own advantage. The film lays out how the government, in collusion with the media, attempted to turn Tillman into a propaganda agent for their war on terrorism. But the family was, slash is, tough and unrelenting, especially Tillman's mother, and wanted answers about his death. And when push came to shove, the truth of his death from friendly fire was much less heroic than espoused by government and media officials. In fighting for answers, the list of indignities thrown at Tillman's surviving family members, cataloged by Barlev in the film, is jaw-dropping and ultimately unsurprising, keeping in mind the boundary lines the Bush administration crossed. Like Pat Tillman himself, apparently, Barlev's movie stubbornly refuses to fit neatly into a box and come up with traditional rousing solutions. The Tillman story leaves you feeling frustrated, angered, and deeply saddened by the waste of the life, by the ease that the individual's life was used, by the shortcuts employed to present the guy in simple broad strokes, and most, by the dumb and or lazy public's quick willingness to fall for the transparently phony baloney story. I'm Richard Dyke Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Tourism Vancouver wants to bring your party of five to Vancouver for Pride Weekend next summer. That's right, imagine you and four friends in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, dancing the day and night away at the Pride Parade, Pride Festival, Dyke March, and Street Party. Enter the Party of Five to Vancouver Pride 2011 sweepstakes by visiting tourismvancouver.com/five. Prize includes round-trip flights to Vancouver for five people from anywhere in North America. Two nights share accommodations during Vancouver Pride at the hip Opus Hotel in trendy Yale Town. A $500 dining credit to Rain City Grill, an icon of West Coast dining just steps from the parade route and English Bay Beach. So which four friends would you like to take to Vancouver Pride? Visit tourismvancouver.com/five and enter to win. The 2011 Vancouver Pride Parade takes place on July 31st, 2011. The sweepstakes runs through December 31st, 2010 and is open to residents of the United States, excluding Florida, and Canada, excluding Quebec. You must be 21 years of age to enter. For full rules and regulations, visit tourismvancouver.com/five.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweer.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 6th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The Harris Theater launches its seventh season of music and dance with a limited engagement by Lar Lubavitch Dance Company. The New York Times says Lar Lubavitch is one of the best choreographers in the world. See his famed company September 22nd and 23rd at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park. Tickets are on sale now and going fast. Visit harristheaterchicago.org to buy today.
Out comedians Mark Hanner and Homer Mars opened Mark and Homer Like This, a two-man comedy experience at the Annoyance Theater, playing every Thursday starting this week through October 14th at 8 p.m. Mark and Homer Like This is an hour of original skits, bits, and songs, including the Facebook song and a ditty about popular gay chat site Bear411. For more info, go to theannoyance.com. Tickets are only $10. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hey, bitches, this is Sandra Valls, and you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast.
You must understand the touch of your hand makes my pulse react. That it's only the thrill of boy meeting
girl opposites attract. It's physical. Must try to ignore that it means more than that. Oh, what's love got to do? Got to do with it? What's love but a second-hand emotion? What's love got to do? Got to do with it? Who needs a heart?
You know, it is one of my favorite things to have Jim Pickett on the show because he always stirs up a great conversation that, well, for me, generally, as a lesbian, is fascinating and foreign. But for many of you gay men out there, is a conversation that either you're already having or you want to be having, or maybe you're, I don't know, too scared or nervous or don't feel like you have a place to have these conversations that Life Lube and lifelube.org provide for the community. So coming up this month, Life Lube, Project Crisp, and the Chicago Developmental Center for AIDS Research is hosting another one of their free community forums. And this time they're exploring the link between relationships and HIV infection. And, you know, as always, Life Lube wants to help you learn ways to have the sex you want and to stay healthy. That's what it's all about. So we're so thrilled to have Jim Pickett here with us again to have a chat. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hi, Amy. I'm good. Thank you.
You know, now that really is the mission of Life Lube, right? For people who don't know about Life Lube and lifelube.org.
Yeah, I mean, the mission is a broad one, to just frame gay men's health broadly. We've been stuck kind of on a disease model for a long time. So Life Lube is about mental health, physical health, spiritual, emotional health, in addition to sexual health. And in terms of sexual health, it's not just about disease. Sexual health is not just about disease or the absence of. It has a whole life unto its own. So we try to talk about all those things on the blog and the website and through these events like our forums.
Now, how do these forums work? How have you found that format to be great to create a useful conversation?
Well, you know, I think they're a great way. I think we still need to come together in real time, in a real place, and be able to see each other physically. Oftentimes, we're all on Facebook, and we're connecting through a variety of devices on our mobile or online. And while we can feel super connected that way, it can also feel disconnecting and kind of isolating. So it's always great to have a bunch of people in the same room, feel that energy, and have a conversation all at the same time, and then that conversation can spill over back on people's Facebook pages or on blogs or what have you.
Right, and as your previous forum that we discussed about 4 or 5 months ago was about love in the age of Grindr, it was just exactly about what you described, like how do we build relationships in this interactive but technological world. And so that's kind of a new question. This question that you're asking now, this forum is called What's Love Got to Do With It? I hope somebody's dressed up like Tina Turner at this forum. And What's Love Got to Do With It? Is it okay to stop using condoms with my boyfriend? Now, I think this is probably a conversation that's a decades-long conversation since the advent of HIV and AIDS. So what is the new, why this forum now? And what is the new information that you want to discuss or the new perspective?
Absolutely. Let me first just say, this is a conversation that I think people have been having privately, but publicly the line is it's never okay to not use condoms regardless. Mm-hmm. You must use a condom every time, all the time, despite the fact everyone knowing that people don't do that every time and need other options besides that line, besides that strategy. So what is some of the new information? Well, last year, a paper came out by one of our speakers who's going to be there from Stanford, actually from Emory University, named Patrick Sullivan. He put out a paper that indicated about two-thirds of HIV infections were coming from the primary partner. in the context of relationships. Relationships could be defined broadly, but, you know, the kind of standard thinking has been, you know, HIV happens among these so-called high-risk gay men who are hooking up online with strangers, who are hooking up in bathhouses or bars anonymously. And in fact, that's not the case. In fact, the majority of infections are happening in the context of relationships, in the context of someone that people know and trust and have strong feelings for, if not love.
So was that Patrick's, what was Patrick looking for in his survey that illuminated that fact? Was he really looking to see where new cases of HIV were coming about within the gay men's community?
Yeah, I mean, they looked at a bunch of data. They looked to see where HIV infections were happening.
Yeah,
were they due to partner type, the main partner, casual partner, and they were also looking at the type of sex people were having, whether it was anal intercourse, receptive or insertive, oral sex, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So they looked at this huge amount of data, and that's what they came up with.
Wow.
That the majority, it's actually 68% of transmissions were from the primary sex partner.
Is that a surprising statistic for you, Jim, to hear in the work that you do?
Well, I think I understood this, but I think the community doesn't. I think the community and the general idea, like I mentioned, is, you know, HIV is happening between people who are hooking up anonymously.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting wasted. They're going up. They're going online. They're doing crystal, all this stuff. When, in fact, that's not really the story.
Mm-hmm.
Gay men are acquiring HIV in the context of partnerships. And what's interesting about that, it's because when you are with a main partner, it looks like, or according to this data, people are frequently more receptive in terms of anal sex, and they use less condoms with their main partners than they do with casual partners. And this makes sense, right? When you love someone and you care about someone, condoms can feel like a barrier to intimacy. Not for everybody, but for a lot of people. For a lot of people, condoms are a barrier to intimacy, so they go away. They're more comfortable being the bottom. When they're getting, you know, when they're having sex, when they're getting fucked, let's just, you know, keep it real here.
Right.
And because of that, there's more frequent occasions with both of those things occurring. So they're putting themselves, that there's more risk there than with their casual partners, where they tend to not have as much receptive anal sex and they're using condoms.
Right. Talk to me a little more about this taboo. I mean, we all, not we all, because I'm not a part of the gay men's community, but the gay men's community all speaks of, you know, we use condoms, we use them all the time. But you're saying that's really, there's a taboo to say that you make that conscious choice not to use a condom, and that for some men that is starting to happen when they are in a significant partnership. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah. I mean, it's a natural thing for that to do. You know, I always say heterosexuals, there's a lot of barebacking heterosexuals, and we applaud the results of their barebacking. We buy baby shower gifts.
Right.
And we ooh and ah. I'm allowed to have that level of intimacy without lots of shrieking and freaking out. And you know, admittedly, condoms are really effective at preventing HIV, and there's a lot of HIV in our community. So figuring out ways to protect ourselves is really important. But we can't completely just discount how people feel, people's emotions, people's needs for intimacy. So I think this is a tough conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, gay men, I think quietly, are way ahead of kind of the, quote, researchers and experts in the field. Gay men are already making decisions about what kind of sex they'll have with their various partners, whether they use a condom or not, whether they're receptive or insertive, They determine their behaviors based on a number of things. We call it officially seroadaptation, mm-hmm. where they're making choices based on each other's sero status and the level of risk that they're willing to take part in. They're way ahead of us on this, and we need to understand that better. And we need to do better about educating people and enlightening them about the role of relationships and helping people come up with, you know, the other researcher we're going to have is named Colleen Huff, and she talks a lot about agreements, mm-hmm. partner agreements, sexual agreements in the context of relationships, and, you know, identifying the fact that for a lot of gay men who are in relationships, long-term partnerships, they, you know, about half tend to be open. They're not exclusive. They're not monogamous.
Right.
And having an agreement in that situation would be something like, if I'm in a non-monogamous relationship, you know, we decide this is the kind of sex we have at home. We're both HIV negative. We don't use condoms at home. But when we have sex with other people, we use condoms all the time. Or we don't do things sexually that could transmit HIV. And if we do something like that, you know, outside of the relationship and we break that agreement, we are honest and we come back and we discuss that agreement, we reassess that agreement, and we get tested. So we don't potentially bring back an HIV or another STD into the relationship. So she's done some interesting, she's doing some interesting work around the agreements piece, and it really mm-hmm. fits nicely into the data that Patrick Sullivan is producing.
Well, and it's interesting too, because the research, it sounds, that Colleen is doing asks so much of gay men and their trust issues with other men, their reliance upon their health, on whomever they choose to be in relationship with. In a significant mm-hmm. relationship with, to operate on a model or an agreement that they both trust each other will uphold. And I'm just wondering if we have seen, because, you know, the stereotype is that, you know, gay men don't really create real intimacy. I mean, right, the lesbians, we have the albatross of that on our backs. We have so much intimacy that, you know, we're sexually dead, supposedly, and gay men have
right.
no intimacy, and therefore they're sexual, you know, beasts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it seems that at some point, Colleen must be looking at whether or not the past few decades of HIV/AIDS has shifted that kind of stereotype, you know, in relationship and agreements between gay men, I would think. Because there's a lot more conversation that has to happen, you know, and I'm just wondering after 30, you know, going on to 40 years, which seems insane, you know, going into past more than 30 years in this next decade, you know, how has that conversation expanded between gay men? And what you're saying is that gay men are ahead of us. They're in the conversation, so they're ahead of the research, the data, or anything that health advisors can do to kind of guide them in that.
Yeah, well, I think we always have. I think we're extremely capable of having intimate relationships, and there's plenty of proof of that. There's plenty of couples who might be quietly off of folks' radar who've been together 40 years,
right?
Just as long as our parents have.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they've been exclusive the whole time in terms of sexuality. I think what gay people have done is they've just been more honest.
Mm.
Human beings, regardless of sexuality, tend not to be monogamous for their lives. And a lot of people lie about their sexual behaviors.
Right.
A lot. This is a common human behavior.
Right.
And gay men have acknowledged that love and intimacy, while they're connected to sex, they're not always completely joined, and that sex can happen outside of that and not threaten that. And it can allow for people to kind of have the sex lives that they desire and the love and intimacy that they desire and be honest about it.
Right.
So what we just need to do is do a better job, and especially with young guys where there's high rates of HIV infection, really kind of appalling rates, help people get the tools to have these conversations, to be honest. This is the toughest thing, is to be honest about our sexual lives. Mm-hmm. And to put our maker, it's such a vulnerable place. And we need to support people in doing that and having those conversations so they can have the kind of sex life that they want and keep themselves healthy. I mean, if two HIV negative guys if they can have sex in that context without condoms, they're not going to pass HIV if they're HIV negative.
Right.
And two HIV positive guys cannot pass HIV onto one another. There's a study that showed if, you know, two positive guys have unprotected sex and they're both on meds and suppressed, a viral load suppressed, there's no transmission of a so-called super virus or reinfection. It doesn't happen.
So wait, let me just stop you there, because that's new information, because the idea or the notion has been that, you know, that there is a way that if you have a more sophisticated or different strain of HIV that you are complicating the virus, so to speak, if you mm-hmm. have the virus and you're with somebody unprotected who also has the virus. So you're saying new research has shown that that is not true.
No, it's not particularly new. There was an important paper that came out a couple of years ago in 2008 that showed this. It was put out, it was published in something called PLOS Pathogens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a team at University of California, San Francisco, and the Gladstone Institute. And they did a study that basically showed they followed positive partners who had regularly unprotected receptive anal intercourse with each other, and there was no occurrence of passing along a so-called superinfection or reinfection.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's not possible.
Right.
It has been documented a few times.
Right.
But it is not this huge issue like a lot of people want to make it out to be.
Sure.
And I think part of that is just this sort of moralizing, judgmental. If we tell gay men the truth, they're going to go off and run rampant. If we tell them that in certain contexts, having unprotected sex is not a risk for HIV acquisition, they're going to just go crazy because they're children and they have no self-control and they don't understand how facts work.
Mm-hmm.
And this has characterized our, you know, kind of how we've dealt with prevention in gay men for years. That's why we continue to hammer home, wear a condom every time when we know people don't. We used to tell people, wear condoms for oral sex all the time, knowing full well that oral sex transmits HIV exceedingly rarely. You're more likely to get struck by lightning twice.
Right.
Then they get HIV from oral sex. Now, of course, that changes if you've just had your wisdom teeth pulled and you have big open gashes in your mouth.
Right.
You shouldn't be on a date in the first place. You know,
right.
You should be laying down having a Vicodin.
Yeah.
But we told people that lie. And we continue to, condoms are the gold standard for prevention. Absolutely. But we have to talk about other ways people can reduce their risk. There's no such thing as eliminating risk in our lives in general,
mm-hmm.
And that goes for sex. And we need to have these discussions so people understand and they can make choices that aren't just sort of based on gut instincts and guesses. They can make choices on what we know to be the best evidence at the time.
Do you hope that in these forums that there is some discussion on how to approach the subject of not using condoms, or if one is uncomfortable with a partner who wants to stop using condoms and wants to continue
right.
using condoms? Because just in hearing you talk and over the years doing interviews, it seems to be a complicated conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you know, many people feel it's a barrier. Do you feel that there will be some conversation of just some practical ways in which to have that conversation if there is a disagreement on viewpoint?
That's our goal. Our goal is to put this information out there and then have some discussion between the panelists and the audience. This isn't going to just be about people being talked at by
right.
experts.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to talk about these various things, like how do you have those discussions in a relationship. How do you have a sexual agreement that works? How do you make it so you are protecting each other? I mean, the Australians developed a model called talk, test, talk, test, trust. And what that really means is you talk, you have communication, you test together again 6 months or so later to make sure, if you're in a relationship, to make sure that your status is accurate, that you're both HIV negative, and then the condoms can come off in that context. And as long as you're keeping the agreements, if you're not having sex that's unprotected outside the relationship, you're not going to bring HIV into the relationship this way. But the talking and the trusting are important, and setting up these agreements so that if agreement something slips, or someone isn't happy with the agreement anymore, like, you know, I don't want to I don't want other people in our sex lives anymore. Or conversely, I want to open up our sex life. How do we do that? That's where the constant talking and trusting needs to happen.
Yeah.
And this way people can, it's about getting clear about what you want, what you're comfortable with.
Right.
And sometimes, like you said, I think sometimes we go along with the flow. Like, I'll say from a personal example, I tested positive in 95. This happened to me in the context of a relationship. We'd been going together for some time. I loved him. We lived together. We lived together a lot. We were together at each other's house a lot.
Right.
And the condoms came off, and we didn't discuss it. You know, they didn't come off at the beginning. They came off after we were really into each other and said the L word and everything. And we didn't have that discussion. We didn't discuss how accurate do we know what are we accurate about our HIV status? Are we sure it's negative? And how are we going to maintain our negativity with each other in terms of HIV status? We didn't have that discussion.
Right.
And guess what? I've been HIV positive for 15 years now.
Right.
Now, I think, you know, having these sorts of discussions aren't going to fix everything, but I think they are we hope them to be enlightening and get people talking and thinking about their own relationships, their own partnerships, their own sexual desires, and figure out how they can navigate all of that and be happy and healthy. And it's totally possible.
Right.
You just need to be aware. And you need to have some, I think, strategies to help you through all this, because, you know, HIV is a minefield and we don't want anyone to step on a mine.
Yeah. Where are the condom companies in all of this conversation? Do they seem to have, I guess, a responsibility? B, are things changing with latex and things changing with prophylactics, with contraceptives? I mean, obviously you all aren't going to impregnate each other, but, you know, it's,
right,
it's much, much more life-altering in some ways, perhaps.
Well, you know, I think there's condom companies are trying to develop condoms that are feel better, that fit better, that conduct heat better, that feel like less of a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're, you know, they are compatible with lubricants and they don't, you know, that they're safe,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a good thing. And I also think it's important to have, you know, I work on, a big part of my work is new prevention technologies,
mm-hmm.
and finding different ways other than condoms. So, for instance, a lube that could have an anti-HIV property in it would be a rectal microbicide. We could put something... I mean, work is going into these ideas, putting an anti-HIV property or chemical in a douche or an enema.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're cleaning out, a lot of gay men clean out ahead of time, and that enema could have properties that would protect someone against HIV.
Mm.
I mean, I think that's brilliant. There's also studies going on looking at taking a pill every day or taking a pill occasionally to see if that prevents HIV, taking an antiretroviral pill.
Mm.
All these aren't going to work for everybody, but I think the more options we have, the better. And I think these new options acknowledge that wearing a condom every time for your entire adult life is not going to happen.
Mm.
Most of us can't do that. For, you know, if we're sexually active for 50 years, expecting someone to use a condom each and every time, it's crazy. And already gay men wear condoms way more than the rest of the population. You sure. already knock everyone out of the ballpark.
Sure.
But to ask for 100% compliance for life is just not a good strategy. We need to have other things for yeah. people. So they can use a condom, they can use a microbicide, they can pop a pill at different various times in their life and choose things that work for them. And I'm hoping we'll have all of these options. And at the end of the day, you know, sex needs to be pleasurable.
Yeah.
And we really need to talk about sex without the constant frame of disease. I mean, when you talk about gay men and sex, the first thing is, ooh, risk for HIV and STDs. That is the very first thing that comes up. Now, if you're talking with straight people about sex, the first thing that comes up is not the risk of HIV and STDs.
Right.
It's not. This is the lens that's put on us, and we're never kind of allowed to think about pleasure and connection and intimacy without that frame. And I think that's also destructive.
Mm.
We still need to consider it. It's important, but it shouldn't be the only way we define our sexual lives. It shouldn't be the only way we define our health.
Yeah.
And I think we get stuck there. So then a lot of gay guys turn off. Like, they don't want to hear anything about HIV because they've been HIV'd, over and over and over and over and over again, and they're sick of it.
Yeah.
So we have to put things in context and offer, you know, choices and be holistic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Think about people as a whole package, and let's start from a place of assets as opposed to clutching the pearls every time.
Right.
And, you know, having that knee-jerk reaction. Let's try to back up from that a little bit.
Who would you like to attend this forum that's happening here September 21st? Who is this forum for?
Well, you know, it is for gay men of all races, of all ages. It's at the center in Halsted, so there's no age limit. Please, anyone come. Allies, you as an ally, welcome to come. Our LGBT allies, our straight allies. But I would love to see gay men of all races, of all ages there because, you know, gay men, 20-year-old gay men have things to teach 50-year-old gay men and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
There are things we can share with each other about how we relate, how we connect. There's ways to pass information and wisdom both up and down that chain.
Mm-hmm.
And these sorts of forums allow for that.
Mm-hmm.
And allow for that mixing that maybe doesn't always happen when you go out to a bar or you're with your friends and your friends tend to be people just like you. In this situation, you can relate with people who are maybe younger, maybe people who are from a different walk of life,
mm-hmm.
who look like you. And there's oftentimes sort of that connection that, you know, those little white people, if you learn something new when you put yourself in those situations. So I really hope a lot of people of all varieties come and just are ready for a good conversation. We try to make it, you know, fun and interesting and lively. And it's as lively and fun as the audience makes it. It's up to the audience, really, to bring their energy into the room.
Well, and I love that you said that even a young 20-something may have something to illuminate some sexual health to a 50-year-old, and we may not
yeah.
be, you know, some of the freedom and the exploration and the options that a 20-year-old, you know, you talk about the fact that you say, well, gay men having sex, the first thing we think is, you know, oh my gosh, you know, HIV, AIDS, and what are they doing to prevent it? And, you know, but I also think that a lot of young gay men get a bad rap too of they don't know, they've been born at a time when they're 20 now that everybody's just living with it and so they mm-hmm. don't care. And, you know, I think somewhere in the middle is kind of a right place, and this is maybe where we are with the conversation of gay men, that we have the perspective of the 20-year-old and we have the perspective of the 50-year-old, and those two can learn from one another. And I think it's exactly what, you know, what is promised in a great forum when people are willing to be honest and willing to show up, ask questions, and talk about what's going on in their lives. And It should be a fantastic, fantastic forum. I hope everybody will come out and see this, and we will have the website linked on our page, on our show notes. But it is Tuesday, September 21st, so you have a little time to plan and maybe get your boyfriend or somebody you're dating or your long-term partner to go, or to go as a single gay man. The doors are opening for food and socializing at 6 o'clock. The program's going to start at 7. This is at the Center on Halsted, as Jim said, in the third floor Hoover Leppin Theater. So it'll be a nice forum. And that's, of course, 3656 North Halsted. The event is totally free. So go by, eat, socialize, have a little conversation. It's really a free, wonderful forum. And for more information, you can go to lifelube.org about this event. And also, you can go there for Peter Pointers and other ways to discuss staying healthy and whatever's on your mind as a gay man. Gay man today, Life Lube is a wonderful resource for you. So, Jim, thank you so much. I can't wait to hear what nets from this fantastic conversation. I appreciate you just starting the conversation that you and Colleen Hoff and Patrick Sullivan will continue there at the Center on Halsted on September 21st.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope lots of people come, and thanks so much.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. So, Stephen, have a wonderful kickoff to your fall. We have kicked it off with the post-Labor Day first show. I am headed off to Vancouver. I'm going to be bringing everyone at least a two-part podcast series about our friends in the north, the Northwest, heading to Vancouver, to the city of Victoria. And I know through my connections with Toronto and meeting Deb Pierce, some of the amazing connections that I met on that trip that have continued through the years. And so very excited that Tourism Vancouver and Tourism Victoria are opening their arms and showing me their fair cities. So I am off to Canada. Oh, Canada. And then we'll be back with lots of shows about our friends to the north. So I'm very excited. Everybody I see says how much they love Vancouver, and they have thriving GLBT communities in Vancouver. So I'm excited to go sit right in the middle of all of them.
Some of the hottest men that have ever existed.
Is it
Canadian.
What?
I'm going to say I'm the hottest men that I've ever been. Canadian.
Oh, really? The hottest men are Canadian?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say that, yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to find you one up there?
Yeah, there's going to be some guy from Alabama going, you know what? But no, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I'm going to bring you one back in my carry-on.
Here's the midget we found. I'm sorry, the little person we found.
I'm going to bring you back an elfin magic from Vancouver. No, I'm going to bring you back a hot Vancouverite. What do you call them?
You know
Vancouverians.
You know, when you're my age, you don't look like a gift midget in the mouth. You know what I mean? You just don't.
Oh. All right, please don't start. Goodness. Little people, please don't. Vertically challenged people, please don't start writing in.
Hi, are you Stephen kidding? Rader. Oh, my God.
Stephen Rader is responsible entirely for all of his language.
Come and get me. They'll hurt me, and I'll like it.
You will indeed. You will indeed. Everybody, Woo. Have a great beginning to your September, and I will talk to you after my travels up to Vancouver. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.